This is the E-Square Podcast recording live from the Junction Complex. You are now making a worldwide connection.
What's up, everybody? Today, my guest is an activist here in Las Vegas. She's also a musician, a teacher, and a real-life influencer. She doesn't just put that in her bio. So everybody, please give it up for the creator of Nothing to Do LV, Coco Jenkins. Let's go. Live, baby. Coco Jenkins in the house. I'm sorry.
Not Jenkins.
Jenkins.
Coco Jenkins, yes.
Huh? What's up? How you doing?
I'm feeling good, feeling great. Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for coming through. I was really looking forward to this.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Don't really know what to expect.
It's pretty casual. We're chilling. So anything you want to talk about or anything we don't go over, it's kind of just open forum, I guess. I don't know if that's the right term. So what have you been up to? Well, coronavirus and the new world, how's it been treating you?
Coronavirus for me has been a blessing, actually. Quarantine was a huge, I know I'm not in everyone's shoes, but if we took a minute to flip the perspective real quick, at least those of us who are fortunate enough to have food, a roof over our head, no issues. It gave us all a moment to pause and breathe and, connect with self, with nature, with family, with, the people that you live with and share space with, with your purpose, because if you don't have a purpose, then, being stuck in a house all day is going to drive you crazy.
For sure. Turn you into an alcoholic.
Or turn you into an alcoholic or psychonaut. I really appreciated the time. I think it gave everyone a time to get to all those things that they were always I don't have time for this.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 100%. I think, I agree totally. I've been able to kind of reflect on my life, my own personal experience with this new world that we're living in. It's been nice to not have to go to work and have a valid excuse not to go, because I think a majority of us, we do fucking hate our jobs, if you don't, that's great. And I'm sorry that you can't go to work, but, I think
I love my job and I'm still it's a job. It's still
exactly.
An obligation.
Exactly.
It's still not, chilling till your body's ready to get up.
Right, right.
It's still not, now you're chilling to get up and now you have the time in the morning to just sit with your coffee or your doggy or, chill outside, whatever.
Yeah. I think in the beginning of everything shutting down, that was the most beautiful part of everything is you get to wake up and get to enjoy your day and kind of just pick how you really want to choose or how you want to spend your time. But as a couple months went by, I think I've gotten a little too comfortable.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So you need that kick in the butt again.
Yeah. Well, people like me, I kind of need structure. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So a job, because there's a period in my earlier 20s, when I 23 to 26, 27, I didn't have a job. I was just hustling around doing what I had to do. And I noticed that when I finally got back into the workforce and I got a job, I was a lot more productive because it gave me structure, So I think people like me, but some people thrive under not having to have any, they're responsible with their time. But me, I kind of need some structure sometimes,
I feel that.
Yeah, I need something that I have to be there.
It's a balance. And I also think people get stuck to the idea that once you're involved in something like a job, that you have to be there forever.
Right.
And it's no, you can work, you can have that structure, and then when you need the time to not have that structure, there's time for that too, and then you can come back to it, and that's okay.
100%. So how do you feel this whole coronavirus, has been handled thus far?
Oh, by our leaders?
Yeah. If you would like to call them that.
One day I decided that I was fudge, we have to pray for them. Mm-hmm. That's what, for real. We have to find it in ourselves to find compassion and be understanding mm-hmm. and know that they're doing their best and they might suck heck of dicks, yeah. but that's why we gotta pray for them to like get it together.
To
like,
take the dicks out of the mouth, yeah. yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I I think it's easy for us, people, you know, regular people, regular citizens, mm-hmm. To pass judgment on our leaders mm-hmm. from our position in society. And you know, when you kind of put yourself in that position in a situation like this where the coronavirus comes out of nowhere and you have to think about people's safety and it's like it kind of all falls on you in a sense. Right. You know, those are tough decisions to make. And I don't know how I would do that. So, I try to not pass judgment as much, but it's hard. It's hard.
It's definitely hard because you're like, yo, that's why we put you there.
Yeah. In a hypothetical world, how would you
have handled?
Yeah.
That's out of my pay grade.
But in a hypothetical world, just like, you know, hypothetically.
That's so interesting. I tend to not think hypothetically mm-hmm. usually because
it would you have shut it down?
Would I have shut it down?
Do you think the coronavirus is real?
That's such a loaded question because it's like, okay, where is it from? Mm-hmm. Who's hitting me up about what it is? Do I really have the information of where it's really from mm-hmm. that I need to hide from the public? Mm-hmm. Or is it, you know, really from this source, like mm-hmm. for real, and I don't have to hide it? I'm going to pass.
Okay. Yeah, I think he had no choice to shut it down. I probably would have shut it down. But like, as Americans, we have so much entitlement and so much, like, everybody's a fucking expert. So nobody can get on the same page. You have your, mm-hmm. you know, you have, there's so many difference of opinions that nobody, and there's such a distrust and a disconnect with our leaders that nobody's going to listen to you, man. You know, like, governor, the president, nobody gives a mm-hmm. fuck. Really, nobody really gives a fuck. If you tell them to do something, you're just giving them, a lot of people, a reason to rebel. Like, we're so rebellious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, and throughout these few months, I know people that have been throwing parties. I know people that's been like people turning up.
Okay.
And I mean, it's just like, how do you feel about that? Like those people?
It's so interesting because I feel like I've been not those people and those people. Mm. You know, I have friends who are those people all the time, and then I have friends who are not those people mm-hmm. all the time. So for me, I've just been doing my best to do my best within, you know, the requirements for, you know, moving through the world mm-hmm. with or without a mask. It's just real confusing is what it is. There's so much information, so much misinformation. So many rules you're supposed to follow that don't make sense.
Mm-hmm. It's very hypocritical.
A lot of hypocritical rules in there. Mm-hmm. So
doesn't a lot like the whole school thing is ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's like what I'm saying is in a sense of they don't really want to send kids back to school. My little brother's in high school, senior in high school, and I think he's going back to class 2 days a week, or maybe that's elementary school. You're a teacher.
I'm a teacher.
What's been the debriefing going on here?
Children are required to report to class every day. At least I teach middle school orchestra.
Okay. Public school?
Public school. Mm-hmm.
You are probably the coolest teacher ever.
I'm a pretty cool teacher. The kids know what's up.
Yeah.
They know what's up. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Let's say it's a good time. I definitely don't hate my job. I definitely miss my kids and mm-hmm. the classroom and like the live interaction and the learning and the light bulbs that happen when mm-hmm. they like, you know, when they get it.
Their brains lighten up. Yeah.
When they make that sound out of their instrument, it's like, and they did it and they knew that they did. It's like, it's mad exciting to mm-hmm. watch.
We'll get back to that. But okay. as far as what the city is telling you to do with the coronavirus and all that.
So we're teaching virtually every day, as in Monday through Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, kids are required to come go to check in
virtually.
Virtually every
right.
day.
So why is what's this spot right here? This pizza place, John's Incredible Pizza. Mm-hmm. Why are they open? Why is Cowabunga Bay open? Wet and Wild open? That's what I don't understand.
Yes.
It's like how do you
justify Cowabunga Bay?
And not school.
Right. Yeah.
And okay, I can understand when you go to school, you're in a classroom. Cowabunga Bay is outdoors. I can kind of see that argument, but like, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's fucking insane. I don't get it. There's so many layers to it, you know? So I don't know, man. I hope we come out of this quick, but I feel like we could have been out of it if people would just get on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I don't know. We'll see.
Page 69.
Hello. But you've been busy, though.
I've been busy.
Nothing to do, Las Vegas?
Yeah, through a lot of coronavirus stuff and the revolution everything.
There's so much going on in the world right now.
So
I don't even know where to start. Mm-hmm. But how is, you've been working on Nothing to Do, Las Vegas for a while.
Yep, There's Nothing to Do in Vegas started, I guess, 5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. I've been saying 3 years for like 7 years, just because it sounds good.
Yeah.
But
you lose track of time.
It's technically been at least 5 years that I started There's Nothing to Do in Vegas. It started as a website, and on the website there was a calendar, and it had like all the events listed, and it was really dope, but it was hard to get feedback on it. And Art, MP Art, who hosts a lot of Waterhole events, mm-hmm. And like hip hop events, b-boy jams, whatever. He was like, "Hey, you should put it on Instagram." And I was like, "Way too cool to have a smartphone and definitely Instagram." And I was like, "Nah, I'm good." And then he made it for me and gave me like one of his leftover smartphones so that I could, you know, run the content off of.
So where did the idea come from? Were you just really like, you felt like the city needed it? Like you wanted that, like you wish there was something like that, so you just created it kind of deal?
Yes, and. Mm-hmm. That as a fan, as someone who like loves subculture, all subculture, just like searching for dope stuff that's like off the beaten path.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as a musician, at that time, I was in a band called R&R, Rhyme and Rhythm. We were together for 8 years, and we were a hip-hop band. And during that time, I realized how hard it was to get the word out and how there was no, like, central hub for this information. Mm-hmm. And then I went to my motherland, which is the Philippines, Manila specifically, and in Manila there was a website called Hey Garch, and that website was essentially like, I saw that and I was like, I'm gonna do that for Vegas when I get home. And when I got home, like, I started creating this website and working on it, and with just the idea to create a place where everyone can find that information about music, art, dance, theater, food, anything dope, subculture that's not part of strip culture.
Yeah, you've done a great job. You know that this, because the key part of it is that you're a member of the subcultures. You're part of it. You're in it. You know what I mean? So that makes it I think that's been a big reason why you've been able to grow the page so much and grow the following so much. But now you've gotten into politics, and you've gotten into a whole bunch of stuff, which I think is awesome, you know? Do you think you get into politics? Like,
I think
you'd be
like
so great.
Dad.
Yeah, I think you'd be so great in it.
I feel like I'm in politics in the sense that I am, I'm finding a way to make it digestible for us, for even myself.
That's very important,
Right? Like, so with this whole pivot or whatever it is to, you know, the information with coronavirus resources, with, you know, when protests are happening, with how you can help different movements within the Black Lives Matter movement, that to me just came naturally. Like, I always envisioned Nothing to Do as like a community bulletin board and somewhere where people can come for information. Mm-hmm. And this just kind of gave me, unfortunately, fortunately, the opportunity to provide for the community mm-hmm. in these ways.
Yeah.
And my whole thing, like I've been saying that us, our peers, people in our age group, even younger, we care and we want to know what's happening, mm-hmm. but we're not watching the news. Exactly. And we're not scrolling. We are scrolling, mm-hmm. and that's okay. But someone has to bring it to us because we're not going to these news sources.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you said you make it digestible for people like us. And it's that you couldn't have said it any better, because there's definitely a disconnect between young people and voting and politics. And we almost don't even want to be in, like, it kind of goes over our head. Or I think a lot of the times, like me, from my personal experiences, I felt powerless in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I felt like my vote don't matter, mm-hmm. you know? And so you bringing that to Las Vegas and our generation and the younger generation as well is like, is invaluable. Like, I can't tell you how important that is. So I want to thank you for that, for sure.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. I felt like that too. I think we've all felt like that, unless we're like growing up studying political mm-hmm. science or something. Mm-hmm. And I definitely think there is a system or a program involved to prevent us from understanding and having this knowledge. Like, if we don't know how to maneuver these situations, then we are definitely going to be powerless.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. But if we start to know and learn a little bit and then start to share that with our friends mm-hmm. and actually start to actively participate in what's going on, especially from a local level, mm-hmm. to me is so similar to, you know, supporting our artists. You know, it's like you can support Drake or Beyonce or whatever big name and, you know, buy their $100-something tickets for their concert. Mm-hmm. But you supporting, you know, a couple local acts on a bill for $5, you can actually see, you know, how that helps and creates that artist. Mm-hmm. And we just have so many amazing artists in Las Vegas to support like that.
We do.
So to me, it was just like mad similar. It's like always amplify like smaller, local, like everything that's in your reach, because then you're a part of it. And then you do actively have like a say in what's going on. Yeah. We even had for politics, there was a woman that ran for judge named Rica Andrade. Mm-hmm. And you guys know her? Should I not break the fourth wall? I'm breaking it. when I saw her like running for judge, and I was like, she looks so familiar. And you know where I knew her? She used to go to Tuesday Blend.
Oh, really?
Like she would be turning up on Tuesday Blend.
Oh, nice.
And on her page, on her judge page, she has like videos of her doing hip hop choreo.
Mm.
You know, so to me, that's like that's exciting.
Yeah,
like that's
bridging
us
gaps,
in office. That's us. Like we gotta be there, and it's starting to happen mm-hmm. slowly but surely. But I feel like the more quickly I can get this information to people, to where more people understand, the more it'll start to happen like that.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely inspiring, and it makes me feel like, damn, I ain't shit. I ain't doing shit out here. No, because you're so involved. No, seriously, you're so involved, and you're so like knowledgeable, and you have those conversations, and you seek that information. And you're right. Like if it's not like we're so spoiled with information that if it's not fed to us on a silver spoon, we're not taking it, you know. And we become lazy and we become complacent with the information that we intake, and we become distracted from mm-hmm. what's really important. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big, I think that's a thing that we all have to recognize, especially young people, you know, because we're missing out on a lot of important information, you know. And, but it's fucking overload. It's fucking
so much information.
It's too fucking much. And it makes me want to just shut my phone off and just move to the mountains.
Okay, so let me touch on that, because that to me is always important to share, because I am on my phone a lot for social media, for my own, you know, for Nothing to Do in Vegas,
yeah,
for my own, you know, artist page, Coco Jenkins Bass, what mm-hmm. up? You know, for my skate page, Ollie Before 30, I still haven't ollied, it's all good. for my teacher page, mm-hmm. I have one called Miss Coco Music.
Sheesh.
I know. And it sounds crazy.
You need a manager or you need an assistant or something. Shit.
An assistant. I have an assistant at school, so that's mad helpful.
Okay.
But it sounds like I'm doing a lot, and I am. I'm not negating that I don't do a lot, but I also, I'm not on my phone as much as people would think.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I have my time for my phone. I almost designate work hours. And then once I'm done, that's it. Like, yeah. I'm not on my phone unless, you know, they answer a call.
Right. Do you check your screen time?
I don't check my screen time. I don't think I need to.
Don't do it.
Maybe I do, but it
might scare you.
Okay.
Yeah, don't
do it. But I actually feel like I learned that from when I first started Nothing to Do LV.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a smartphone.
Okay.
I didn't really have a smartphone until 2017, which 3 years ago,
okay,
where like it was fully functional all the time.
Yeah,
I had like a screen that would function only when there was Wi-Fi.
Mm.
So like sometimes I would be posting to Nothing to Do and I would be using like friends' phones, like, because I just didn't want to have that on me. And so now that I have this full, like, working smartphone, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm really good about, like, all right, if I'm not working, then I need to go. Like, there's nothing else here that serves me.
Yeah, it's hard to do that because you get addicted.
Stop.
You know what I mean? It's so hard.
Stop it.
I know. It's like, but it's just like I'm just sitting here waiting. It just, I was thinking about the other day, like, in the 1800s, or not even the 1800s, the 1970s. In the
1970s.
Yo, 1990. Yo, like, if you had like, some downtime, or you're just, like, you're on the road or something, and what are you doing? Fucking reading a magazine?
I try and practice that. Like, if I'm waiting in line, I try not to wait on my phone. Like, like, wait, observe.
Yep. Be present.
Be present.
Yeah.
If I'm annoyed, like, why am I annoyed? Does this really have to annoy me? Like, those are moments, like, those little moments where we're so used to going to our phone, like, practice being with self.
Yeah, and I'm kind of scared for, like, the younger kids growing up that are middle school and elementary school that have these smartphones,
mm-hmm.
and you can't pry it out of their cold, dead hands, you know? They're just staring at screens all day. They're growing up in that.
I've definitely...
It's scary if you think about it.
Not actually physically... wrestled with a student over their phone, like where they're like hanging on to it for dear life, and I'm like, no, fool, I told you 5 times to put your phone away.
They can't help it, they're addicted. These kids are addicted. But you know, the parents, I think a lot of parents are to blame too, shoving these screens in their kids'
like,
faces.
Why does your kid have an iPhone 11?
Why does your kid have an iPhone? Well, my niece, I can't say that.
Wow.
My niece is in middle school, so I got her an iPhone.
Okay.
And for the sense of her location, we always know where she is.
Okay.
And I don't know, she just like hangs out with friends and shit. Like, it's like we need to be able to fucking call her. You know what I mean?
To me, as a teacher, and I have no parent perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a complete like.
It's a good perspective,
other side.
Though, yeah.
I still don't understand. Like, okay, I know times are different, but just think of when we were growing up and we would have to call and check in. And then mm-hmm. I know my parents were really like, okay, let me talk to the parents at that house to make sure everything's
good.
Yeah. Okay, there's that. All right, I know times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even with the smartphone thing, like, why does it have to be like the super new?
Mm-hmm.
And I would even almost like just give my kid a flip phone and... I'm sure you could enable some like location device on it, but what happens with the new ones is that they download like everything else that they don't need.
I know it's tough, and
then the kids get in trouble for their phones, and then they still don't get taken away, and I'm like, why?
Yeah, it's definitely, well, it's just sad that like a lot of kids don't aren't outside as much as they used to be. I grew up in the street. I grew up outside okay. on the sidewalks. Okay. Not like that. Yeah. I didn't grow up in the street. I like don't.
Okay, okay. You mean funny. Like kicking it on the electric box?
Yeah, on the electric boxes. You know,
getting
outside. Yeah, outside yep. playing and. You know, knocking on my friend's door just out of nowhere, just seeing if they want to play, you know,
Yo,
kind of
real
deal.
Quick, how did we sit on those? How what? Did we sit on those electric
Because they
boxes?
Were they were like, they were cool.
Yeah, but they you were, know? No, I'm talking about like during summer, like.
Oh, because we were kids?
Yo, kids can fucking, do it. Kids are so resilient. That's why I'm not
savages.
Worried about them.
I'm scared of kids. They're fucking savages.
That's why I'm not worried about them.
Yeah, I used to eat hot Cheetos off the street. I used to think they tasted better. We used to eat crickets. We used to catch scorpions, a whole bunch of shit. But
that.
Yeah, but anyways, but I had a great childhood in that sense. I was outside, you know, interacting. But like, kids don't, they're not doing that as much. You know what I mean? Because they're inside playing games, Fortnite all day. And parents allow it because they don't have to parent in that way. I think, and I'm not saying this for all parents. I'm just saying like, if your kid is on a computer or on a phone for more than 2 hours a day recreationally, I think that's a little bit too much. Like, you need to tell them to go outside and play with their friends and go play basketball or something outside. You know, go get dirty, go roll around in the mud. Okay. That's my perspective, you know.
Though but, I do, when you put the hours on it, I do wonder how many hours I spent on Napster and LimeWire. Because
oh,
just
unlimited.
Download.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was on there for hours.
I was just talking about this with, what was this, Trade? Was I talking about this with Trey?
Probably.
With the Soulja Boy had the cheat code with LimeWire.
Uh-huh.
And he would download his songs under other people's names. Like 50 Cent, he would put 50 Cent in the club. But
no,
that's
one of the most innovative marketing techniques
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
And that's
I'm sure that
was Trey that you were talking with about that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, Trey's a mad scientist for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned Nothing to Do. You're becoming like a representative, I feel like, for us. Is that scary to
I'm
think?
I'm with it.
Is
no,
that scary?
I'm with it.
With
I'm
it? Yeah.
ready. I feel like I'm ready. You know what I do struggle with is when people call me queen a lot. I'm not into that.
Okay. Why not?
That's
like a trend. It's like a fad, you feel like?
Yeah, but I feel like it's like putting me on this pedestal that like... Yes, I'm dope and doing these dope things, but it's like I'm still like with the people.
Yeah.
And I feel like it kind of separates me, but it's also like probably I just have to come into that because if that's where people want me and it's not like a negative thing.
I think the intentions are right.
I just don't want people to think like I think I'm, you know, better than anyone or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's just...
I would never got that vibe from you.
Okay,
ever.
That's good to know.
Yeah,
that's something I do. Like, you know, I'm just like, queen? That's a big title.
Well, people throw it around like it's nothing. Like the king thing. Everybody says they're king and all that. And I get it, like, you want to, you know, you're, that's
it's like out
you,
of respect. Or like
yeah,
respect
well, it's just, at the same time, you want to look at yourself as a king and or a queen, and, but it's like, you know, not everybody, there's, you know, kingdoms only have one king and one king, queen, you know what I mean? I don't know. It's not that deep. It's not that deep for me. For me, it's just like, you just have, you know, everybody, like, some people aren't kings and queens. Some people are role players, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's that deep. I don't got to go that deep.
Okay.
But what else were we talking about? So MP Art really got, really like kind of helped you get Nothing to Do going.
Yeah, that's our baby. That was
And you guys are still working on it today together?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So how's that relationship going?
Well,
the dynamic of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is the juicy stuff. Okay.
Uh-oh. Exclusives.
It is because we never so Art and I were together for like it's like one of those like who knows how long, but it's a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe I would say maybe total like 7 years. Yeah, that sounds about right. And in the beginning too, like we didn't advertise our relationship, and that was from me because at that time I was like really into navigating the music world, and I just felt like me as a single woman plays better than, you know,
I see that, yeah.
As an attached woman. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like navigating a lot of different situations.
It's so weird. Why is it like that?
Because of dudes. Get your dudes. Tell them. Yeah. Tell them to be like not weird.
Yeah, stop thinking with their dick. Yeah.
Essa, you know what's up.
Oh, well, I've been there.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Wait.
Sorry. Go ahead. Where were you at? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay.
So you chose not to be open with your relationship.
Like, not let people know.
Right.
Not let people know, like, mm-hmm. we were together. So mm-hmm. we would always show up and, like, be friends mm-hmm. or partners. Mm-hmm. And I also felt like, for whatever reason at that time, in my head, I was like, that's probably better for the business, too. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want people to, like, I don't know, just judge that we were a couple. And
I get it,
who knows
yeah.
what projection I was, like, coming up with at that time, but...
Yeah, you want to keep your private life private.
Also that. I feel like I've always, like, there's certain ways people handle their relationships in public, and mm-hmm. and there's, like, certain people, like, where I admire, like, oh, they don't really advertise it like that. Mm-hmm. That way, it's about just them and their art or whatever it is they're there to discuss, and not about, you know, what's going on, mm-hmm. because that's not what I'm here to discuss.
Right.
So, but yeah, we had this baby called Nothing to Do LV, mm-hmm. and he was kind of like he spread the word about it, mm-hmm. is what was his role. And he also still to this day helps spread the word, is, a consultant for me. Like every time someone comes to me, almost every time I'm like, all right, what do you think about this? Mm-hmm. Like, how can we work with these people? And he's just really amazing at like, the collab, mm-hmm. like, how can we collab? How can we make this even bigger and better using all of our resources and combining our worlds? You know, he's like an amazing dancer and pulling from that world and then, you know, bringing it together with music and art and everything. And we just love working together. Mm-hmm. And we broke up, like, let's say for real, we broke up. Y'all know how that goes? It's like you break up and then you get back together. And then especially because we were working together.
You're always around each other.
And let's say for real, we broke up this past December 2019. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely a struggle. And we definitely needed time apart mm-hmm. for everything. Mm-hmm. Whereas a couple times before that we had broken up, we would not talk about anything except business. Mm-hmm. But then somehow, maybe it was my fault. somehow those conversations would always turn into not business.
You sent that late night text.
You know, and it was just like, that didn't work. Mm-hmm. But I am very happy and proud of us that we've, you know, split, and we're at this like really awesome point in our relationship where now we're like, we're fam and mm-hmm. we have this project that we both care about and understand how important it is.
Yeah.
So it's like,
That's awesome that you're able to do that and continue working on working together. Because that could sound like it could be dreadful in some cases. You know,
I've heard this.
Yeah,
and
but
that's also why, like I said, I usually never bring up my personal. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I'm in a place where I'm okay with that now, mm-hmm. and I'm okay with, you know, if I'm feeling like I don't want to talk about that, I could be like, yo, I don't want to talk about that.
Oh,
move on.
Yeah,
you know.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, well, back to your point about NPR. He's such a dynamic. He is such a dynamic dude. And he is so awesome mm-hmm. in so many ways. He's always been so supportive of me and all the things I've done over the years. And he's always been there and showed up. And he's gave me great advice. And he always just has a great vibe. You know, you see him out, he's gonna be dancing his ass off. You know,
that's right.
And he is who he is, and he also is he's also a key player in out here in the local scene and in Las Vegas scene.
He loves to just help people.
Yeah, he
loves to help connect people, and like there's literally no one else I trust more than him. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to a lot of things in my life, I know I can ask him, and he'll give me a real answer.
Yeah.
We might not always agree on it, but I know I can go to him for advice, support.
That's what you need. You need somebody like that. Sometimes that disagrees with you.
Also, you know yes, what I mean? Definitely, and can offer that other perspective. Mm-hmm. And like the reason that I wanted to bring that up also is just to give people examples. Like I think it's time to start giving people examples. Like, yo, this can be healthy. Mm-hmm. There's no like jealousy, or we're able to communicate about that. Or there's no like leftover feelings where we'll like get back together or anything. Mm-hmm. No, it's just like it's just love in a non-romantic way now.
Yeah, respect.
It's a respect, yeah. For sure.
I think that's respect is an underlying factor of pretty much every kind of mm-hmm. relationship. Mm-hmm. If you have a respect level, sometimes that takes years to really have and solidify, you know, but so that's a long time. You guys invested a long time into each other.
I think so. And if you view relationships like an investment, mm-hmm. you know, like when you make an investment, like with money, you hope to get back what you put in mm-hmm. and double that, right? Mm-hmm. Or more, whatever. Yep. So why like invest this time and energy and get nothing?
Exactly.
Nothing exactly. back. Like obviously you were with someone for a reason. Hopefully, you know, there's things that you can still respect and share with each other and not have to lose that after, you know, the romantic part is over. I think we've just been taught and programmed like, no, like once you break up, it's done. You never see that person again.
Yeah.
That delete. To me sounds awful.
Delete. Well, sometimes, I think sometimes you gotta delete some
unless
people.
They're like, obviously, if yeah, they're yeah. like, what's the word?
Abusive. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just pieces of shit.
Manipulative. Yeah. All of those things, yes.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that plays into internet culture now, social media. We can just hit the little blue button and unfollow, delete. You know what I mean?
100%. You know? To me, social media is like people like hate it, right? And I'm like, I don't understand that. You don't have to hate it. Like you can literally curate what you're feeding yourself, like mm-hmm. through your feed. You can literally curate that. And that is like, to me, that's a practice for my real life, like what I'm curating in my real life. Like, okay, if I'm not feeling this energy right here, I can leave and it's okay. I don't owe anyone anything.
Yeah, 100%. We're definitely in control. I know the algorithms can seem a little out of control sometimes, but I've had my love-hate relationship with social media over the years. It's definitely been the hate has been stronger than the love of it, and I've deleted my accounts. I've unfollowed a whole bunch of people. I've like cleansed myself of it, and I never really engaged in social media until like maybe even a couple months ago. You know, it's like maybe when this all started and I had more time to really engage, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't know how to really engage, really. And it was just because it seemed so impersonal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like my friend Brandon, he meets friends on SoundCloud and he meets friends mm-hmm. on like, you know, streaming services.
I love Brandon already. Yeah. I don't know him, but I love him.
Well, I think you know Bonks. Bonks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Bonkers, yeah. So he has all these internet friends that mm-hmm. end up being his friends in real life. And
it's possible.
And I was always like, that shit is weird, man. That shit is, but really it just comes down to just like kinda just like, yeah, bro, I fuck with you, fuck with me, like, you know what I mean?
That's it.
Yeah, there's a person behind, you know, the keyboard. So, you know.
To me, if like whatever you're interacting with online, if you interact with that person or thing in real life, then that is also real life. Yeah. Like it just is. Like if you're talking to your friend online and you're like, "Hey, let's go link up." It doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Yeah. It's like it's really real. So,
Yeah, I think it's funny too, cause like when you meet those people online, you only know them by like their at name. You just call them by whatever their.
I know their people come up to me. Hey, you're nothing to do. Hey, you're everything to do.
Yeah.
Are you everything to do in Las Vegas?
Yeah, that's funny as fuck. That's like, how do you respond to that?
I help them out. Oh, okay. I help them out.
Like hey, I'm a person. Yeah,
Sometimes I let them struggle just to laugh, yeah. Like. That's funny.
I'm a human.
But no, I help them out. And,
I'm not a bot.
I usually ask them what their name is mm-hmm. and then what their at is, because I do recognize people by their at just from the interactions that I observe.
It's easy to do, yeah. But then, well, like, you know, it's because that's our first, like, putting a face to a name.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see their face, your picture, and then you you see their name, their at name. So that you, your brain, I think your brain kind of just connects those two until you know the real name. But but anyways, your teacher. Let's get back to teaching.
Okay.
You are a fuck. You're a teacher, man. We need more teachers.
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you? So you're, but you're. Well, of course, we always need more teachers, but I feel like there's not a lot of people becoming teachers these days. You feel that way? Just because of the pay and...
Yeah, I don't... Okay, let me squash that rumor, because I'm a teacher. I'm a single woman with no kids, and this job is everything. This job has made me rich.
Word.
I wouldn't say that it's like... I mean, I definitely think teachers deserve more money for what we do. Just the time and hours, dedication, and children that we take care of.
Yeah.
But it's not a badly paying job. It's just badly paying, I think, in compared to, like, the heart that goes into it. So I could see that, but I love teaching. It's not... no, let me back up and not say that. I love teaching, and let me just tell you this. Before I taught full-time, I was, like, starving artist tip. Like, you know, I did my music, I did the page, and then I also substitute taught, actually. But I did gigs and stuff like that. And, you know, I could get by and whatever. Teaching full-time has allowed me to... I bought a house this year.
Holla.
And...
Congratulations. I'm trying to get on your level.
And now I now I only do the projects that I'm truly passionate about. Like, I don't have time to BS with, you know, playing in a cover band on the strip, because I really don't like to. And it sucks my soul. And now that I make money teaching the youth of America, now I only have time for the projects that I'm really invested in, you know, so.
What's your experience with the Clark County School District, the curriculum? Do you feel like, should we not talk about that?
No, okay. It's okay. I can, you know, my main thing that I love to do is, like, share information. So even about teaching, like, I make posts about teaching because I know most of my peers either don't have kids or aren't involved or whatever it is. And I feel like it's important to let them know, like, we are, like, woven into the fabric of society. We are here bringing, like, the youth of America up. So, like, you should care about who's teaching and what's going on in the classroom, because those fools are going to be the fools that are coming to Tuesday Blend next. And, you know, you don't know, like, if they're going to be respectful or if they're going to appreciate what's going on or if they're going to be on their phone the whole time. You know, so let's see. Curriculum. My most, the thing I'm most excited to do this year in my classroom is decolonize the music classroom. So orchestra, I teach orchestra, which means I teach violin, viola, cello, bass. Okay, and I teach it in an orchestra setting where the kids learn how to participate in one on stage and, like, be a professional musician.
What grade is this? Middle school?
Sixth, seventh, eighth.
Okay.
So my kids are anywhere from 11 to 15 if they didn't pass their grade. Curriculum. Oh, yeah. So orchestra itself is just a very Eurocentric practice. You know, it comes from, you know, we teach about the music from, like, Vienna, Austria, and Italy, and France, and England, and Germany, and it just centers around that. And that's, like, what music is.
Do you feel like the kids are taking it in well? Or they're
Think they're not. I just, this year, I'm going to be teaching them about so much more because we're online and because the focus isn't, like, them playing an instrument because we're not going to be there together. I'm about to teach them, you know, about music, like, roots and indigenous music from all over the world, you know, from Ghana, from the Philippines, from Mexico, like, everywhere.
Are you allowed to make your own curriculum? How's that process, or are you given, like, certain worksheets?
We're given a curriculum, and then we have to, like, hit certain standards. Because we're distance learning, some of those standards are not going to be possible, and I'm not going to waste my time trying to teach them. So I'm going to teach what I feel like is important to my kids and my community.
Yeah,
you got, like, mostly Black and Brown kids, like, learning about, like, these, you know, old white dudes, like, okay, they're important, but also, like, these fools from China are important and from South America, you know, and you know, Aboriginal music from Australia. Like, this is all part of our makeup, and it's all music. And I'm excited to also connect them to music, like, as healing and emotional and, like, just to get into a lot of different aspects that I don't think we have time to touch during the school year.
Yeah, do you feel like kids would be better off if they're homeschooled?
If their parents are with it.
Yeah.
Or, like, if we had, like, little community classrooms, mm-hmm. I think that would be tight. Yeah. That, but, like, teachers, public school teachers have been asking for that kind of environment for mm-hmm. a long time. Mm-hmm. But it's not possible when, you know, my largest class is 59 students. Mm-hmm. It's just not possible for me to create, you know, these little, like, cool learning environments.
Yeah.
Or it might be, but I'm not on that level of teaching.
Yeah. Do you, can you see the school to prison pipeline? Can you see that happening?
Yes, but I'd rather not talk about that.
Okay.
I don't feel like, just because in my experience, most of my kids, like my orchestra dork kids, they don't get caught up in that because mm-hmm. just the nature of orchestra itself is usually like nerdier, dorkier, like mm-hmm. whatever kids.
Yeah.
I do have some Hood Star kids, just, you know, I'm just saying. Also, let me tell you, I just got approved by my principal to teach a semester of Hip Hop 101.
Oh, dope. There needs to be more cultural influence in the schools and also more applicable teachings, you know, like how to buy a house, how to do taxes, how to do...
They don't want us to know.
How to do an interview. Yeah, they don't want us to know. They want to keep us dumb, you know what I mean? And that plays into the school-to-prison pipeline kind of deal. But do you see that changing? Or do you think that's something that's only kind of reserved for private schools?
I think it's changing because the way we're learning and teaching is changing. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to have... I don't know how discipline's going to work now anymore. How are we going to know, like, what the kid's doing? The kids aren't going to be disciplined for getting into a fight during school because it's not there.
Right.
So I'm actually really excited to see a lot of the positive changes mm-hmm. that virtual learning will create.
Mm. Back to the curriculum. I will have one more question about that. Who makes the curriculum?
Those guys? Like, the... like, that's... You know what?
I want to know who makes it. I want to know who makes it.
I'm embarrassed that I never, like, questioned that. That's all.
No, it's okay. Because that's
something with it.
That's
know?
Something we don't... really ever question. We just take it like, okay, this is what I guess what we're supposed to learn, but we never, because somebody had to come up with, okay, I want the kids to learn this. Yes. There had to be either one person or a group of people that came to that conclusion, and this uh-huh. is what we need to feed our kids' minds. And I think we need to question them
mm-hmm.
and not only question them, but look at them in a sense of where are they from, what's mm-hmm. what's their situation, what's their upbringing and kind of deal. And then
so a real quick breakdown and something that you and everyone can pay attention to is voting for the trustees for the school board because those are the types of people that make the decisions on what we're learning and they have the power to change it, you know, every school year or whatever. So we can vote those people into those seats. Like there's someone running right now, I'm not gonna say her name, but she's like, she's running on a platform to get a gun for every, like, teacher in the school. And we're like, can we just get some pencils and paper? Like, who's supplying these guns and lessons?
Yeah.
So that's something to pay attention to. And then every district decides for themselves. Mm-hmm. I know that. Like, to a certain extent, they decide for themselves. And based on what they decide, the federal government will or will not give them money according to what they're teaching or doing or marks that they're making.
Okay. See, that's like, how do I, what am I trying to say? That's like So a group of people get to decide, you know.
Who are those people? Yeah. Where do they come from?
Old white people. Yeah. All the old white guy. And it's sad because, like, you know, if an old white guy that's never had a really struggle in his life comes from a suburban family and he's in office now, politics kind of running his family and he's well-connected, he's not going to know anything about hip-hop. He's not going to know. Teaching in hip-hop is not important to him. Mm-hmm. Teaching, things outside of his realm aren't going to be important to him. You know what I mean? And I'm not just saying the white person, but it could
You're
be
You're seeing the symbolic
old white dude. It's like just because what's important to those people doesn't necessarily, that's not, like, we need to take more, I feel like parents should have more control over what their kids are.
This is true, but the cycle is always like, okay, so when it's time to offer those choices, mm-hmm. who's participating in these votes?
Yeah, no,
and I can
vote.
Tell you that even on like a school level mm-hmm. where we have like 997 kids or whatever, those parents of those children are not always participating, whether it's because they can't or don't care mm-hmm. or can't understand what's going on mm-hmm. or are working three jobs so that, you know, even
that's
see.
That's probably the biggest problem.
Da-da-da-da-da, all mm-hmm. of those things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But Hip Hop 101 coming to a middle school
so
near
dope.
You.
So dope.
Actually, I taught the course 2 years ago and had some really awesome special guests. Like, I saw you had Smurf on the show. Mm-hmm. Smurf came through.
Okay.
And, did some freezes for my kids.
Yeah.
I had my homegirl, Nat the Lioness. She came and did we actually performed for my kids.
Man, that warms my heart because I can't imagine how awesome or how inspiring that is to the kids. You know what I mean? At seeing like dope people come in and perform and like show them. Like,
DJ AR came. He actually went to the school that I teach at, and DJ
nice.
AR came and brought his whole DJ setup. What? Let the kids come through and scratch it.
That's how it starts. The next, mm-hmm. Big, huge DJ was like, I saw DJ AR come in my class in the seventh
mm-hmm,
grade,
mm-hmm.
and from then I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how it starts. That's so important because it exposes the kids to, like, you don't need a degree. You don't have to stay in school to be a DJ. You know what I mean? And it opens their minds to the possibilities of what else life could be. It's not like, like me, I come from, my parents were in the corporate world, the hotel business and stuff, I wasn't exposed to, like, music and DJs and stuff as a kid. I was in sports my whole life. And so that's what I thought life for me was, But when because I didn't get those other exposures in school.
Mm-hmm.
or anywhere else,
mm-hmm.
So you bringing that, like, that should be like a 100% curriculum for every, because there's so many different kids with different interests. You can't just, like, you're just feeding them a little bit. You're just feeding them a little bit of what life has to offer. And honestly, like, who remembers what the fuck we learned in school,
mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
they're going to remember DJ AR coming up and uh-huh. DJing for them.
And remember how they feel. They're going to remember how they felt.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
This was so dope when, we did this event or this event.
I'm not saying the curriculum is totally flawed because you need to learn about, geography is cool and all that. But, sex ed needs to be, they need to ramp that up. You need to have sex ed from sixth grade.
I just had a talk with my homegirl the other day that, they separate the boys and the girls, right?
Yep.
They never taught you. Did they teach you guys about periods?
No.
And I'm
I had one semester about, it was called health in middle school, sex ed. I had one semester, and that was it. And that was kind of like, I was sixth grade, you're like 12. You're not like full into puberty yet.
Right.
So that was like, we were all way too immature for that conversation. We were all way too, we're
probably
just.
Needs to be brought back a couple of times.
Every year, I think, to go into depth, because it's more than just about learning about a woman's body or a man's body.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, the emotional aspects to it. It's about controlling your sex drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's about understanding why you're feeling this way or mm-hmm. opening those discussions. Like,
also, real quick, to understand why girls have periods so that it's not like this gross thing. But it's like, yo, we have them because that was supposed to be a baby.
Yeah.
And now it's like bleeding out of our vagina. And that's why, you know, we might have a headache or feel crampy or, you know, and it's not like, it's not this made up thing that we're just, you know, and I feel like that's how a lot of
guys
do it. And then boys
make fun of girls, make girls all self-conscious.
Yeah,
you know?
It's an awful cycle.
Yeah, you have to. And then it's like most of the time parents aren't giving their kids the birds and the bees talk as they should because it's an uncomfortable conversation, you know. Mm-hmm. And especially in a lot of households where, you know, it's a single mom raising their kid. They're not getting the, you know, the knowledge they need from the dad because the dad's not around, or, you know, maybe the mom's not around. And if you're not opening up those conversations in some kind of like safe place, it's easy to get misinformed by a kid's friends who looked some shit up on the internet or just, you know, just lying. You know, kids lie a lot, you know.
Or hear from their older brother or sister.
And that's in ninth grade. What the fuck do they know?
Woo, they're so old though at that time.
Oh man, those are grown ups. Can't wait to be in the ninth grade. But it's just so crazy to me that and sex like runs our life, right? Like everybody's always thinking about sex, and especially on the internet, it's just sex galore for free. You know, it's like softcore porn Instagram.
In the internet and in our city of Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like we have to educate our kids 100% on it. It should be like, that's like a no-brainer. I want my kids to know everything about sex. So they're prepared. They're going to be kids a way shorter period in their life than they are going to be adults. They're going to be adults, you know what I'm saying, the majority of their life. They need to know, like, you know, the big thing about it, I think, is controlling your sex drive and understanding the mental that goes into the topic of sex. So, I don't know. I'm just a guy, so.
No, I think that's an awesome perspective. And, yeah, tell your friends.
Vote. We got to vote, man. We got to vote.
So many people to vote for. Even, like, I always remind people on the page, like, it's a learning. It's okay if you don't understand now.
Yeah.
But, like, try and understand a little bit and then it'll just come to you a little bit. Because even me, I'm going through it. I don't fully know everything. It's just like...
How do you feel about the presidential race right now?
We need a whole new system. That's how I feel.
We need to be like Star Wars and have a council that makes decisions, to me.
Okay.
Like a Count Dooku and a Yoda. It'd be awesome to have a Yoda.
I'm not a Star Wars...
You're not?
I can't. I'm not pulling the reference.
All right, this is over.
Bad,
this episode is over with. All no, right. I'm just kidding. well, what I'm saying is, like, one person is, it's like, we always end up with, it's just like, there's too much to do, too many decisions to make for one person. And I get it, like, the president probably doesn't make all the decisions, or, you know, a lot of things don't really hit his desk that, you know, his team or his cabinet, I would say. But there needs to be an established council.
There's this music video that I'm going to send to you, and I'm going to look up as I'm talking, of this dude that on a fire beat and fire track breaks down the government system for us. And one of the things that I got, one of the main points I got from this track is that those roles of offices that we like know that we're familiar and comfortable with, like the president, like the mayor, those are the two ones that I like, you know, that everyone's like, oh yeah, I know.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah,
and that
governor,
we think those are important to vote for. Those are the least important to vote for. And they are, he was like, by the time it gets to their hands, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. They're the ones that just sign it and are like, all right, that's what you guys decided.
Yeah.
Like that's their role. They're not even really making these decisions like that. So, okay, I'm not going to... I tried to do it at the same time and...
That's okay. Yeah, that's... and that goes back to the school. Like, we were never taught to really vote. The emphasis was never given to us to vote. You know, and as kids, I get it. You're just like... You're not... You're just... You know, your mind's all over the place. You have, you know, you have attention span of 2 seconds. But, you know, if you had a whole class and... That kind of taught kids in a kid-friendly way about politics, even about the current state of politics, and, you know, laid it out, like, if you're in the third grade right now, the teacher should be teaching you about who's in office right now or about the judges or the next election. Like, even though that they might forget about it, but it's gonna they're gonna be aware of what's somewhat aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then by the time they get to be an adult, they don't feel so out of the loop that they're just like
out of the loop. Yeah, they just give up.
Yeah, you just give up.
So
yeah.
Let's just give up. Real quick, there is I don't know the names on the ticket, but I have, you know, through my little network, I have seen fools championing whoever's on the Green Party ticket.
Okay.
And they're pretty much like, yeah, they're not like politically connected to a whole bunch of people where they're owing people a whole bunch of money or people are paying them a whole bunch of money. Mm-hmm. Like, they're pretty independent of that and have a cool platform. So that's something that I was going to check out today, who's running. Because, yeah, I'm so not surprised and surprised that folks still think there's only two parties mm-hmm. in the United States.
Yeah.
But it's presented as such. Like, right. The other parties are just left out of the conversation.
So divisive. I don't understand why we need parties. I don't get it.
I think our generation, and I'm really hoping, like, the next, like, by maybe, like, the next one, like, I know fools are not caring about parties anymore. Mm-hmm. Starting with us, like, we're like, we don't care what party you are.
Yeah.
We just want you to be a good person
exactly.
and care about the people. We need people in politics, not more politicians.
Exactly.
We need, like, teachers. We need, you know, construction workers. We need fools that are out there doing the job so that they mm-hmm. can, they actually have, like, what they have to say about their job is a value.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think what plays into it, the point you're trying to make, is that they're not so disconnected from the strife of normal people. You
100%.
Know, or poor people. And they're not, like, they understand the struggle because they've either been there, they mm-hmm. grew up in that, or they, you know, they worked in that, and they're around it. You're, like, because these politicians are so disconnected from life, from regular life, you know.
And I wouldn't even say the struggle, because a couple people on our board of trustees, none of them have been teachers or ever were teachers for Clark County School District. So why are they sitting up there on the board making the decisions
It should be a requirement. You know what I mean?
Makes sense to me.
Oh, my God.
So it's like just that, just to have regular non-political, like, people who have been doing something else than planning to be in politics.
Yeah. That reminds me of, you know, Stephen A. Smith is? He's an ESPN reporter. he knows nothing about the UFC or fighting or any of
okay.
that. But he was an announcer. He went on to announce a UFC event.
Okay.
And he sounded stupid. Because he's not from that world.
Okay.
You know
okay,
what I mean? You
okay.
see my point?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Nobody cares about your opinion, bro. Because you don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, he was, like, making commentary on?
Yeah, he was making it on a sport that he's not experienced in.
Okay,
and he's
got
that
it.
He never did before.
Got it.
So it's the same thing. Like, you have people making decisions about something that they have no experience with.
Right,
how did
right.
you even get in this position, sir?
Right, you know? Right. And because you're your friend or because you have yeah, money or yeah. connects. Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's a boys club, per se. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of sickening. But anyways, enough of politics before I get a headache. you're skateboarding. So what's up with that? I didn't know you was a skateboarder.
I wouldn't call myself a skater. No, I'm like a skater at heart.
Yeah, you're a... Yeah, 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 yeah. That's awesome.
It's one of the greatest things I ever did for myself. Literally, I'm still...
For you?
Huh?
It's therapy?
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's, was it? It saved my life.
Really?
It was like skating is fun. Skating saved my life. I love skateboarding. All the hashtags, like, mm-hmm. that's me. I feel them 100%. And I've only been skating for, 2-3 years now? Mm-hmm. And so my whole thing was it when I turned 29? Oh, yeah. On my 29th birthday, I took a little solo road trip just to be with myself, mm-hmm. and I chilled on the beach. And, you know, just like reflecting and you know, going over my life and what needs to happen. And I found myself, like, that year I had found myself being scared to, like, do different things. More specifically, are you familiar with Nelson's Landing?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, the cliffs, right?
Yep.
So I've been going there since I was 18 to jump off of those cliffs. Mm-hmm. And I found myself every year, like, getting more and more scared to jump off those cliffs. And
you were becoming an adult.
And I was like, yeah, and it was making me angry.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, on my birthday, I was like, F that. Like, no, yeah. This is the year. I need to do everything that I've been wanting to do.
Yeah.
Because if not, I'm just going to be scared. Like, I'm going to keep falling into that.
Isn't that so weird? You're just becoming more and more scared as you get older? Something you've done before?
It's like your body. Yeah, especially something you've done before.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the worst part.
It does. You've learned to embrace the fear? Or you've learned to, like, just get mad at it and go right at it kind of deal?
So what I learned from skateboarding was just like, well, that was the initial lesson that I had planned to get from skateboarding, right? And then I started skating and I learned so many more things than I had ever imagined. That was the time that me and Art had broken up, actually. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it definitely helped me get through that breakup. Like, mm-hmm. I was like depressed. I was like losing weight. Mm-hmm. And I could go to the skate park. Nobody knew who I was. It looked funny. Like, and, you know, you have all the thoughts running in your mind. Like, I'm a mm-hmm. grown woman, like, walking into a skate park. Mm-hmm. Like, and when I grew up and where I grew up, like, mostly I would only see, like, little white kids skateboarding, like, white dudes. So, actually, I would pull up to JC Park, and I saw, like, black and brown dudes there, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered I have a really dope homegirl named Rebecca that skates, and I hit her up, and I was like, yo, I'm trying to do this. And she brought me out, and then since then, it was just on. Literal lessons of, like, falling down and, like, okay, trying again because you want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Lessons of, like, dropping the ego because, you know, I'm out there, a grown woman, mm-hmm. and here's this 8-year-old, like, hey, you got to, like, do this with your foot and, like,
tumbling,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you got to do these things. And it's, like, this kid, and, you know, I'm a teacher, so now this, like, complete role reversal and, like, me, like, being a beginner at something that's so physical. That helped me understand my students more, like, connect with what they're going through. Mm-hmm. Like, when I'm telling them, like, okay, you got to make your first finger round and bring your elbow under and sit up straight and place your bow and, like, do all these things, and they still can't make a sound.
Yeah.
But they're doing all of the things I'm telling them.
Yeah.
Now I understand because, yo, this fool's telling me, put your foot down, like, pop, slide, jump, and mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'm doing it, but I'm not doing it. Like, now I get it,
right,
you know?
Right.
And
that's awesome.
It's, yo, I have a whole, like, philosophy. I wish I started sooner, but I'm grateful I started later because mm-hmm. I feel like it gave me this perspective of how helpful it is and how, like, it taught me how to practice again.
Mm.
Because, you know, like, as a musician, as someone who's been doing music for, like, 20 years, you know, you get in your, like, routines of what you practice and how you practice, and sometimes you don't improve. And then skateboarding was like, no, you just have to try it a different way or approach mm-hmm. it a different way. Or, you know, like, you can do it. Maybe you do have to do it 50 more times until mm-hmm. you get it right. And, like, that's okay.
Yeah, it's, you're never really too old to start something new. A new hobby, a new interest. I mean, we're all humans, and I think we're all very dynamic, and we all have, like, you can like more than one thing, you can practice more than one thing, you can do more than one thing, you know? And it doesn't matter, like, the stigmas around it. Like, you could have been like, oh, skateboarding's for kids, because I think that's what most people think, mm-hmm. you know? Like, skateboarding's for kids, but, you know, as a grown woman, you went out there, and it's probably scary, but it's like, but at the same time, it's liberating as well, because you're like, you're tapping into your inner kid still, you know, there's still a little kid.
I love playing outside.
Yeah, like, and I think that's what's going to keep us young, is doing stuff like that, you know. It's awesome. It's awesome.
So your
goal is to...
Ollie before 30? Yeah. I missed it. It taught me that too.
You're 30?
I'm 32. I just turned 32.
Girl, you look like a you. You look
look like 22, maybe. 22.
You know. It's because I'm tapping into that youth.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, for real. Yeah. I'm just always happy and always doing things that I love to do.
Yeah.
And always, like, playing. Like, just, like, it doesn't have to... Everything doesn't have to be so serious. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
Life's a joke.
But, oh, real quick, like, yeah, I never hit that goal. I still can't ollie. Now I'm like, fudge, I'm scared. Like, but it's like I can cruise around a skate park. I can do it, you know, I can do a little rocky fakie. I can.
You'll get the ollie. You'll get it.
I haven't been trying or practicing.
Okay.
It's a little, it is like, now I'm like, fudge, scared to fall. Even though I know how to fall.
Yeah.
It's just like that recovery time is like, it's a lot different. It's a lot different as a 32-year-old versus a 22-year-old versus a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
If I learned when I was 12, man. Yeah. It's like, as a kid, nothing phases you.
Yeah, for real. Well, that's awesome. I'm proud of you
skate
for doing
too, right?
That. I grew up skating. I don't skate anymore.
Let's hit the skate park.
I'm down.
I've officially brought six people out of skate retirement.
Oh, word?
Yeah, because I'm come skate with me.
I got to dig up my old Osiris shoes.
Do that. I got a board that you can borrow if you don't have one.
I'm super down.
I got three, actually.
We
got
to go in like sunset because it's too damn hot. I might die.
I feel that.
Yeah, but I'm down.
Oh, my gosh. When I was first skating, I would bring my board everywhere. Like, it came with me to Mexico. It came with me to New York.
Yeah.
Like, I skated in New York.
Yeah, you can meet cool out. The skate park culture is so fucking...
What a dope community.
Yeah.
And a lot of girls and women have been coming out, too.
Mm.
So, like, with them, it's just mad easy to connect because, you know, it's not a lot of us out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, right away, it's, like, all love. It's all, like, support. And it's a good time. And then the dudes that aren't creepy are really dope as well. Yeah. They're mad supportive too.
You always got the creepers. Anywhere, any world you go into, you always got the creepers.
Yeah.
So funny. Yeah. The skateboarding world, actually, my first Get Busy event was, my first event ever that I threw was a skateboarding competition at Craig Ranch Park.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's how I kind of like really got my confidence in the sense of I could throw an event because people came out and it was dope. And and the people that are just like the skaters, like, it are just like, they're the funniest, like, laid back, like, I don't give a fuck kind of.
They really don't.
A lot of skaters, like, they just love to skateboard. They just love it. You know what I mean?
Love. Like, I can't do anything, but going down a ramp and like coming up and hitting that. Well, it just feels like there's no feeling like it. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that I learned to like, I just learned to drop my ego and realize like no one else cares. Like they might look at me and be like, oh, who's that?
Mm-hmm.
And then look and see what I can do. And then once they realize I'm not tight, like they're back in their own world.
Yeah.
And you realize that because when you're skating, you're not paying attention to anyone else.
Yeah.
Because you can't. Because if not, you'll fall and
exactly.
die.
Exactly. You wear a helmet?
Nah.
You're not that bad.
Nah.
Oh, well, it's been great, Coco. I think we'll wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Getting a little hot in here, a little sweaty. Okay. Anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
Have you been to that skateboard shop here in the mall?
What's it called?
Steds.
I have not. Nope.
Check it out. Okay. Black-owned skateboard shop.
Oh,
by
what?
This like OG skateboarder that's huge like bull skater.
Okay, we'll go check it out.
And he has a whole stage set up there.
Oh, word.
He like wants to bring in bands and like stuff there, like music skateboard collab.
Oh.
Yeah.
We should go there right now. After this.
I'm down. After
just say what's up.
If I think I have time before my jam session.
Okay.
I wanted to shout out Nothing to Do LB. If you don't know what to do or if you want to be informed, check out Nothing to Do LV. It's not about me, it's about us. So just trying to connect culture and community. Check out my music at Coco Jenkins Bass. I play cello. And I got a homegirl named Amisa, who's a really dope MC. We work with Trey Voorhees. We work with a lot of other dope musicians. And we will be putting out our project this year. I called it.
Hello.
And just mad love to Las Vegas and to E Squared.
Appreciate you coming through.
Thank you.
This was great. I'm so excited to listen to this.
Oh, okay, me too.
Yeah, we gotta do it again.
I'm with it.
Cool. I appreciate you coming through.
I had other topics on there. I'm with it.
Maybe I'll did you? We didn't get to it.
They're probably not really appropriate topics anyways. Okay. Because, you know, I did mention, like, the teacher thing.
Yeah. And I did leave one of them out for that. So I
appreciate that.
All right. Well, till next time. I appreciate you coming through.
Thank you.
Peace.